everybody. How's it going? Welcome to the second ever episode of CKCB Presents. I'm Bill.
And I'm Paul.
And joining us, we have special guest Nora Ashley.
Hi.
How are you doing, Nora?
I'm good.
Nora, if you remember, she was on with us on episodes 73 and 74. She told her entire story about her experience with the troubled teen industry. Those assholes. And so we're gonna talk more about the troubled teen industry in this episode of Crimes Killers or CKCB Presents. Now I want to, because this is the second episode, the first episode of it, I didn't have the name picked out or anything like that. We just did it, and it was just for the future, the soon to be named, you know, extra episodes, whatever. But now this is it's a separate podcast. Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer is me and Paul. And we might have, like fill-ins come in. Like if Paul can't be here, or if for whatever reason I can't be here, you might have
a fill-in. You'll probably call me 10 minutes before you need me and I'll have to hop on.
And, you were on a couple of Patreon episodes, I believe. Yep. And then, yeah, so there's going to be that. And we'll also collaborate with other podcasts on, on Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer. But that's going to be the extent of bringing guests onto that show. So CKCB Presents is going to be interviews. It's going to be like guests. It's going to be authors. It's going to be, anytime we have guests or whatever, it's going to be CKCB Presents. So it's Paul may not be on all of those episodes because, he has a very strict schedule because he has a job that takes a lot of his time. And he also has a podcast of his own, which takes up an awful lot of his time. If he can, he will be here, but he might not be here, type of thing.
Yeah. Or I'll do a sneak peek, like a cameo.
So while we're at it, Paul, just go ahead and plug your podcast.
So the podcast is called The Seance, and you can find it on YouTube, Rumble, and anywhere you can listen to your podcast. Talks about metaphysical, paranormal, conspiracies, things that'll boggle the mind.
Things that go bump in the night.
And that too. Oh, yeah.
Sweet. Nora, do you have your podcast up and running yet?
I don't, actually. Interesting. That 20th anniversary of getting sent away that I had in December knocked me on my fucking ass. I have barely talked to any other survivors since then, since like October. I have been like non-active in the activism community for the last few months. I'm like just pulling out of that though and starting to get active again. But I mean, that's just proof right there of how deep this goes and how it's a lifelong thing.
Right.
That shit was 20 years ago and it's still impacting me and my whole life enough that I've had to change my entire trajectory.
Did something happen or was it just like it all came rushing?
No, it's literally just the traumaversary that triggered everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and I can obviously relate. I mean, coming as a cult survivor, I mean, I've got a few years on you. It's been a lot longer since my ordeal ended than it has been since yours did. But there's days when it's just like, I don't even want to get out of bed. I just want to sit there and, fantasize about, going all Norwegian black metal on some of these churches.
I mean, the last 6 months or so have probably been the hardest in my entire healing journey from this. Like, it didn't compare to anything else that I've dealt with in this at all. And it's been that long.
What you're talking about is there was like a reunion of people of Troubled Teen Industry survivors that had been, you know, just like from all over the country, just coming together just to hang out and fellowship, right? And talk about everything.
Basically. So it was in October at the Hilton in LA. They called it Survivor Prom. It was basically just an adult prom for us because that's like, we didn't have things proms and graduations and whatever.
Yeah. A lot of you didn't get to do that because you were being marched through the wilderness.
Exactly. And so it was kind of like a chance for us to like experience something normal that we missed out on. But like, I think the bigger importance of it was like connecting with other survivors. Like I got to see a girl who I went to my boarding school with for the first time since I left. And that was pretty, we were the only two people from Mission Mountain there. I mean, being such a small program, that didn't surprise me, but, that was like, I've seen a couple other girls since then, but the fact that it was there and it was the 20th anniversary of when I got sent there, and it was really awesome. It was a really great experience too. I think for everybody, because I mean, you can talk about and you can connect, you can network and you can, you know, build communities and stuff, but it just having that in-person kind of aspect brings a whole new like understanding and appreciation and like just, I don't know. It was awesome. I got to meet Alexi too. He's the one that introduced me to Marty, who's the one I wrote all those articles with that got Daniel shut down. Like, that was a good hug too.
Yeah.
It was a great experience.
Now, right now the Troubled Teen Industry is like front and center where it needs to be.
Finally.
Because of, you know, there's two documentaries out. There's The Program, which is the current one. And then there was one that came out last year called Hell Camp. And I've watched them both over the past, over the past week or so, getting ready for this episode. I mean, I already had a firm grip on it, but I had never actually watched anything documented or anything. I'd seen a YouTube video here and there, but that was not the extent of it other than what I had read about and what, you know, you told us about on episode 73 and 74, but they're finally in the forefront and everything. And like lots of people, like if you hashtag ICU survivor, or if you hashtag TTI or Troubled Teen Industry, you're going to find a whole shitload of people just wanting information, wanting, it's just like, okay, how did I not know about this? People want to get involved.
I was just telling somebody about that last night. It was somebody from my boarding school, actually. So the only real like involvement I've been able to have in the last few months is I started this Facebook group for people who went to my boarding school, Mission Mountain School, you know, a couple of years, 3-4 years ago, just as a way to keep connected with the people who I went there with. So we've been sitting at about 15, 16 members for the last like 4 years. Well, Kat Whitehead found me. I'm sure you've heard that name before. She's the girl that, that testified in front of Congress about that program in 2008 at a congressional hearing, that ultimately got the program shut down. And that was one of the very first like big public, like outcries against the TTI. And she was involved in that. She found me through my activism and reached out and was like, hey, we went to the same place. And I was like, oh my God, I've been trying to find you for years. And in about two weeks, that group went from 15 members to 122.
Oh, damn. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's been incredible. But I was talking to a girl in there last night. She's like, you know, I've wanted to get involved in the activism, but I'm terrified. And I was just like, what about it scares you? Let's make that less scary.
Right.
And I was telling her that exact same thing.
Well, here's what I would say to anybody who might, you know, especially a survivor that wants to get involved that doesn't know. And this is one survivor to another. If it's scared, don't be scared, because the people that you're going up against, they're the guilty ones. They're the ones with something to hide. They're the ones who need to be scared. Yep. And they're the, They're the ones that need to, you know, I mean, that scene in the program where they went to that church to talk to the PR director or whatever. And he's just like, well, I don't know what y'all's problem is. And he's like, our problem is you. We grew up. He's like, well, why are you hearing about now? Well, we grew up. We grew up. What the fuck did you think was going to happen? I was talking with Paul about this last night. And it's just like, in my case, I was going through that as like a child into a teenager in the 80s during the Satanic Panic. But what's also goes hand in hand with that, I'm Generation X, motherfucker. What the fuck did you think was going to happen when I became an adult?
You know? It's not even just that. It's not just that we grew up. The implication of the fact that we're talking about this shit now is, one, what you did didn't break me.
Right.
And two, I've healed from it now.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm the threat to you.
Yeah. And they don't think that, oh, it was so long ago. Well, I mean, it was just, you know, sweet.
We really saw that attitude when we went down and for that groundbreaking down in Hurricane last year from the mayor. That's basically what she was saying. She came up to us afterwards and was like trying to be, you know, like sympathetic about our situations. But that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Let's say that Colleen Stan, the girl in the box, let's say mm-hmm. that she somehow managed to escape and had never actually seen the face of her tormentor for the 7 years that she was in captivity. Let's say that she escapes and then 20 some odd years later finds out who the son of a bitch is. Are they going to treat him any different? Are they going to treat him? Oh, it was 20 years ago. No, they're going to lock his ass up.
There's a reason there's no statute of limitations on sexual assault and murder.
Yeah.
Because it's implied that punishment for that should never like be cut off. Like it should always be an option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, when I was not so much the Hell Camp documentary, that one
I've seen a lot more mixed reviews on.
It's because they were trying to humanize it's like you had the one guy, Horsehair, and he's sitting there with a tube in his nose and all that stuff. And he's just like, well, you know, we're good people. I believe that, what's his name? I believe he was a good person. And all that. No, he wasn't. And no, you weren't.
Mm-hmm. No. And Hell Camp was okay. See, I actually haven't seen either of them yet because I've been dealing with trying to process this anniversary and stuff that like, I haven't been able to be involved with TTI stuff much at all. But I'm definitely not quite ready for those yet. I think Hell Camp came out the same week of my anniversary of getting sent away, to Wilderness. and so I haven't even watched them yet, but what I've been able to see, which is kind of interesting, is the TTI survivor community response to these, kind of as an outsider, because I haven't seen them and I haven't formed my own opinion of them yet. So right. I'm just seeing this influx of like responses and reactions from survivors about it without having formed my own yet. And Hell Camp kind of got mixed reviews. It was like, oh yeah, you know, like good work, but like it kind of fell flat.
I agree.
I have seen nothing but overwhelming positive responses and reactions to the program.
Yeah.
Everybody is just like raving about how well it was done and how finally people have a resource instead of having to explain everything themselves and try to like justify the fact that it's trauma. We can be like, hey dude, there's a documentary, go watch it.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to do that emotional labor anymore.
No.
And it's covered it accurately enough in according to our lived our lived experiences that, you know, I haven't really heard anybody make any comments about inaccuracies or anything like that. Misrepresentation or, you know, all those things that you worry about when it comes to documentaries, especially with something like this. But yeah, the survivor community is just like, we're so grateful for the work that was put in and the angle that was taken with that. And it was just done in such a perfect way that it's going to spread the awareness that we've needed to kind of get a get a like a foothold in.
Yeah, there was a scene in the program where they had found that this one girl, she was basically supposed to be like the hardcore drug user, and that was just a lie that she made up because they would keep punishing her until she admitted to it. But when they initially drug tested her, clean. She was clean. She had never touched drugs in her life. But her parents had shipped her there anyway, just because they couldn't get along with her for whatever reason. But
I found my paperwork.
Yeah,
that outlines that my parents were convinced that I was on meth. I didn't do meth until after I left the program, and I've only done it once.
But they took that, and you know, she wrote a letter on, she wrote a note on it. It's just like, see, I never touched drugs, bitch. You know, and she put it in the mailbox of the person that was over her, and shortly later they're filming it, and all of a sudden the phone rings. It's the guy that was in charge of her, and he's just trying to make himself out to be a victim. It's just like, I had a hard time there too, and blah blah blah. I'm just like, you know, it's just like I could put myself you know, I could imagine me talking to one of the pastors of Faith Assembly, you know, and and it's just like, God damn, it was satisfying, and at the same time it was a letdown, because you know what, it's just, you know, we don't, yeah, it's just, I don't want anything from them as far as like, you know, I don't want their money. I just want them to acknowledge that they were complicit in ruining the lives of many, many people, but they won't do it. They will not do it.
One thing that I think it is important to acknowledge, though, is there actually are staff out there who do genuinely mean well. They want to help. They're just so naive and ignorant, and usually most of them are very young. Most of the staff that I knew that were what we call good staff were under 25 when they worked in the industry, and most of them left before they were 25. And they were barely older than we were. We had a staff in my wilderness. Our senior staff was 22. I was 17. So like the people who were in charge of taking care of me and stuff, and who were out there expecting to die like the rest of us were barely more than kids themselves. So like there definitely is trauma that the people who work at these places get. It's very different. And it's a lot more nuanced and, rare, I guess. But it does happen. It's basically, they've been brainwashed as much as we are into believing what the program teaches, right, just like our parents.
Yeah. Paul, if you have any questions or want to interject anything, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm kind of doing I'm trying to do the research myself. So, you know, kind of going in and looking and researching on the back end here.
Okay.
It's time from producing.
But, wow.
As far as a recap, I mean, explain Hell Camp. Explain, you know, to myself, because I'm getting educated as you know, along with some of the listeners and viewers that might be questioning what actually happened.
Okay, well, what I have an idea. Hell Camp and the program are on Netflix. You can watch both of them. What Nora, just go ahead. And I said that we were going to do this at the beginning, and I didn't, and I forgot about it. I'm sorry, but I got myself on a roll. But Nora, go ahead and just give us a nutshell of your story, just to give him an idea of what we're talking about.
Okay, so I was 16. Almost 17, 4:17 a.m., December 22nd, 2003, I got woken up by two strangers in my room screaming at me to get out of bed. I was strip searched. I got dressed. They put me in a SUV, took me to the airport, flew me to Utah. And I got to the headquarters for my wilderness program before anybody told me anything. Like, I had no clue where I was going. I had no clue who these people were, what I was doing, who I was with. And in the whole process of them like dragging me out of the house, my parents were nowhere to be found. Whoa. That's actually a tactic that they use. Like it's all over the transport websites. It says, oh yeah, it keeps your kids safer if we're able to use an element of surprise. Keeps you from running or fighting, basically. Yeah. But that actually is one of the most traumatic experiences, like instantaneous moments in that a TTI survivor can have a lot of times. Like that's the one thing that a lot of us is like, that's what we have nightmares about. That's what keeps us from sleeping. Is that, you know, shock of getting woken up and basically kidnapped. And then I spent 5 weeks in the West Desert of Utah. 3 days after I got there, on Christmas Day, we got hit with a blizzard that didn't stop for a week and dumped 7 to 9 feet of snow where we were at. Our shelters consisted of tarps, and spring rated sleeping bags. I got horrendous frostbite. And then after that, I was sent to a therapeutic boarding school in Montana called Mission Mountain School. For another 18 months, where like my frostbite was never treated. I still have significant long-term physical issues from both my programs. I actually did a second wilderness program before this one. That was a voluntary one and it was bad, but it wasn't like traumatizing or abusive.
Because you volunteered to be there.
And yeah, well, and it wasn't really a traditional like wilderness program either. Like the therapeutic component of it was not the extensiveness that a lot of current wilderness programs use. And it wasn't like we had sufficient gear. Our parents bought all our gear. We had everything we could possibly need for any weather condition. We never ran out of food. We always had more than enough. Those kinds of things. And the staff, like our therapy consisted of journaling, basically. It was like guided journaling sitting in the woods. And we hiked no more than 4 miles a day. So it wasn't like what you think of when you think of wilderness.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a toned down version. So I don't really count it, but yeah, I did go to another program before this. So I did a total of 20-ish months in programs from 2003 to 2005.
Yeah. And when you went in, you were 17.
16. I turned 17 in wilderness. I turned 18 at my boarding school and left at 18 and a half.
Yeah. But there are people who they don't tell you when your birthday is and you lose track of time because they don't, you know, not so much the wilderness camps where you're out there in the elements where you can see the sun's rising and setting and all that stuff. But the people that in the programs that they talk about in the program, that documentary, that they had the windows blacked out inside their facility. You couldn't tell if it was night or daytime.
And one of my favorite personal examples of that is from November of 2004 until I left my program in June of 2005, I did not know who the president was.
Yeah.
Because we had an election in November. They didn't tell us anything. I had no clue who it was until I left.
Yeah, I think that was when...
There were girls there during 9/11. They had no idea that happened until, like, years later. Like, or, like, you know, months to years later.
You see somebody going to, you know, they get out and they're like, hey, we're going to New York City. Where the hell did the Twin Towers go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Basically.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
A good like pop culture reference would be the Shawshank Redemption. The one prisoner that's been in his whole life and he gets out and he's just, it's culture shock. He has no idea how to function because he has no lived experience of any kind of society or culture or, you know, like day-to-day function even. A way that a lot of us describe it is like when you get out of those places, it's like you suddenly realize like, holy crap, it's like time has completely stopped for me, but nobody else.
Yeah.
Like you're just kind of like in a holding pattern and standstill the whole time you're there. And then you get out and you're like, holy crap, all of this stuff has happened. And I had no idea. and people talk about it like it's like you should, they expect you to know about that kind of stuff. Like there's a lot of like culture, like pop culture stuff, like music and entertainment and true crime and things like that, that people will reference. And if I don't remember, because I have a great memory for things like that, if I don't remember it, my response is probably, yeah, that's probably from what, 2003 to 2005.
Yeah. Well, there's like a lot of stuff, you know, that, I mean, I can relate to that too, because mm-hmm. obviously I wasn't able to watch TV. I wasn't able to watch movies and stuff like that. What I did, you know, like on the down low. But there's a lot of things just like, I've to this day, I've never seen 16 Candles. I've never seen Dirty Dancing. Yeah, and because those movies came out while I was still in the I'd never really had any desire to watch them afterwards. Some movies I did, some movies I went back and watched, but you know, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I saw that one. I mean, every teenage boy is going to want to see that movie.
But I love that movie. That is a great fucking movie. My mom let me rent that because the cover of it was like nondescript and innocent. She let me rent it over and over and over again. Like I rented that thing every weekend for like 2 years until she found out what it actually, like she actually watched it herself. She's like, oh my God, what have I been allowing?
Yeah. But I can, yeah, you know, I can definitely relate on that aspect because of the fact that, you know, when you're sheltered of all of that stuff, you don't know. I mean, I caught up on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But then again,
there's still a lot that I'll never catch up on.
Yeah. But
I just, there's no reason or purpose for me to store that knowledge at this point.
Funny story. You know, once everything folded and everything, and I had moved out of my mom's house and in with my dad, one of the first things I did was I watched Top Gun.
Yeah.
And you know, because that movie had come out and everybody was talking about it, and I would actually get made fun of because I hadn't seen Top Gun, you know? So I
get that a lot too. People will be like, wait, you don't know about that? And then I'm like, story time.
So I finally watched it. I didn't really care for the movie. I didn't think it was that good.
I've had that. I actually have had that response to a lot of things that I tried to catch up on. I was just like, why was this important? Because we weren't there in that moment. So we didn't see any of the hype or the reasoning or the any of it. Right. We're seeing it completely from the outside as like, what are these crazy people doing?
Yeah. But and Paul, there's also part of the enforcement tactics and part of the rehab tactics that they use in troubled teen industry are border, you know, they would violate the Geneva Convention.
Oh,
I use Biderman's Chart of Coercion to describe it. It's a document from 1956 that was developed by the Army as basically a cheat sheet for the most effective torture of prisoners of war. They use every one of those tactics. Just about every tactic, technique, and approach that programs use at its core has one of those tactics that were outlined back in the 50s. Wow. As a, this is the best way to break somebody.
Yeah, and they also,
you backed know, by the U.S. government.
And the way that they do this, the way that they market it to parents, the way they basically brainwash the parents before the kids even have any idea what's going on. They find like the greatest salesman on the face of the planet. You know, somebody could like sell ice to an Eskimo.
Yeah. Hey, here's a summer camp to get your kids off the street during the summer.
That's exactly, you are exactly right. You are exactly right.
Yeah.
But one thing that they do is it's like, okay, your kids, if you talk to them, but that's another thing. They don't let you talk to your parents after until like you've achieved a certain level in these programs, and they don't, they won't let you talk to your parents, but they also tell the parents, your kids might say things. Remember, your kids are master manipulators.
Yep.
Master manipulators. They, That's why you couldn't, you know, control them at home, because they manipulated you. They're going to try to manipulate you again. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's how they trap the parents, because the parents don't know what to do. And in some cases, yeah, there probably were kids that were like out of control and stuff like that. Yeah. But there were a lot more that weren't, like Nora here.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like a little bit, you know, maybe it was a lazy parent. Maybe it was just a little misunderstanding that kind of escalated into something else and the parent freaked. You know, there's a gazillion different reasons why a parent would choose to send their kid to to look for help. And then, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, you get these salesmen here that it was like, all right, we can help. You know, and like a lot of the ones out in Utah, they don't even have to pay for a building, because they just meet out in the middle of the desert and hike you for you're out there in the element in the middle of the Utah desert, you know, under the harshest conditions, that the hottest dry heat during the summer and some of the most brutal winters in the entire country.
Yeah.
And you're out there in it.
They use federal government and state government land also. One, because they don't have to pay to use it, and it's open, basically, but also because the hoops that have to be jumped through legislatively to even try to go after anything that might happen out there is just, people don't see it as worth it. Our politicians in Utah are just as... they're deeply tied into this.
Well, our entire
economy is based around the TTI. Intermountain Healthcare is our biggest healthcare system. It is like massive. That's tied into the TTI. All of our politicians have ties to it. I mean, Mitt Romney owned Aspen Education Group for a while, and they were one of the biggest umbrella companies of TTI programs at the time. So, you know, a vast amount of his money came from legalized child abuse.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's concerning is this is still going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bigger than ever. It's bigger than ever has been. And this started back in the 70s with, I think Teen Challenge was the original one.
Yeah. Actually, I call that the modern branch of the TTI. Really, the residential programs for troubled kids started with a different kind of operational program. They were more like group homes or like work ranches. But those started back at, like, the Brown schools opened in the 1940s.
Yeah.
After, I think at one point they owned the Elon School
and Synanon.
Yeah.
Synanon was one of the OGs as far as modern is concerned. I bring up Teen Challenge because I knew about that one growing up.
It's
crazy because I bought it. I mean, Teen Challenge, I grew up Merritt Island, Florida. Paul knows where that is, but I grew up there, and there was Teen Challenge, and everybody knew about it. It was this place where, you know, troubled kids went to. It was this camp and all that stuff and everything. And, you know, in your episodes 73 and 74, I talked about how, like, after I had gotten it, I had gone to this, you know, gotten away from the cult. I had gone to this church, and Teen Challenge brought a group of people up there, and they were basically singing songs about Teen Challenge. And I'm like, you're worshiping Teen Challenge in a church. You're not worshiping God. You're worshiping. And that struck, but I was like less than a year and a half out of the cult at that point. Mm-hmm. But I got this book. It's called, what the hell is it? Like, I Can't Believe I'm Alive. And I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but this woman, you know, she's been through everything. She's been through a cult. She's been through Teen Challenge. She's been through, you name it, she's been through it. And one of the stories that she talks about in that book is she got shipped Teen Challenge in Merritt Island, Florida. And she, wow, she kind of goes through her, her experience and everything there. And I was living in Merritt Island at the time, oblivious to the fact that that shit was going on there.
During that time when you were going to church and they were bringing those groups, were you aware of what those groups were and what was your like viewpoint towards them? Like, were you aware and had you been taught essentially that these are bad kids, like be careful around these kids? Like, were you aware of that?
I was 15. I mean, I it was less than a year after the cult had folded and I moved in with my dad. But I got with this group of, you know, when I moved in with my dad up that I changed schools and I got with this group of, metalheads and, but they were Christian metalheads. So my first band was a Christian rock band, but,
metal music is a gateway drug.
but so I start going to their church and everything and they brought Teen Challenge in to do it and all that stuff. And it's just like, we were told of the tagline. These kids were having trouble growing up and all that stuff and everything, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. They kind of make you feel sorry for them, but also being like, be careful. They're dangerous.
But I was the only one. I even said something. I'm just like, and I didn't even, at this point, I had not even made the connection that I was raised in a cult yet at that point. You know,
you didn't realize just how much like those kids you were.
Exactly. But they're up there. Thank you. We love Teen Challenge or whatever. I don't remember the exact song or whatever. And I'm just like, this is weird. This is really freaking weird. You're in a church. This is its own sanctuary. This didn't happen like during a church service. This was its own like special event and everything that we, you know, like on a special, you know, like a special event and everything. It was like a variety show type of thing. And they're up there. It's like, oh, they have Teen Challenge and all that stuff. And they brought one of the leaders of Teen Challenge up to talk about it and everything and how they're close knit with, you know, with God and all that stuff and everything. And, you know, they had the kids lined up on stage. I'm glad we got a chance to like really talk about this now because we didn't have time in your episodes. I kind of mentioned it a little bit, but I'm glad I have a chance to really explain it now because it I think it fits better in this episode than it does in the other two. But they had like 10 kids up on the up on stage behind them, or you know behind the like the two, you know, authority people or whatever that were there, and they're talking about how James here, he was on drugs. Jimmy here, he was running with gangs. Cindy here, she was a prostitute. Yeah, it's just like telling us, and I'm looking at these kids, I'm not buying it. You know, I'm like, I don't know. I maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Then they started singing the song.
Were very high. That kid never touched drugs, and she's still a virgin.
I know. But I'm like, you know, and then they started singing the songs, and that's what really rubbed me the wrong way. I was just like, you know, you're in a church. If you're singing songs, you should be singing songs about God. You shouldn't be singing songs about Teen Challenge. You know, it's basically take God out of a church hymn and replace it with Teen Challenge, and that's what they were singing.
Well, I think that's part of the whole tactic. They paint themselves as false prophets, and people believe them as such. Mm-hmm. And it has the same outcome as cults do.
Surround yourself with the good intentions around that atmosphere. Yeah. You put yourself in that atmosphere of good and holy, blah blah blah.
Out of everybody that was there, out of everybody that was there to watch this, I was the only one that was scratching my head about it.
Speaking of music about programs, a few weeks ago, before the program came out, you sent me a demo of a song you wrote about the TTI that is in fucking incredible, dude.
Thanks.
You did such a good job on that.
You're the only one that's heard that demo.
Well, I can't wait to hear the final.
Oh, you have heard the final version, but
really?
I sent you the demo.
Oh, that's right. You did. That was the first one. You did send me both of them. Mm-hmm.
Because I had woke up that morning, or I had woke up one morning, that song did not exist. By the time I went to bed, that song was recorded. And But by the time I got done to putting the guitar solos in it and mixing it down, I had been working on it all day. My brain was fried.
I think you sent that to me at like 3 o'clock in the morning while I was on my way home from karaoke.
Yeah. And I called you the next day and I'm just like, you know, I was just like, what do you think? You're like, I love it. I'm like, should I go back in there and do some stuff?
Well, and we talked about a couple tiny little nuances too.
The guitar solo in it was terrible. the drums were like non-existent.
What guitar did you record the solo on?
The solo that was on my Ibanez.
I can tell. I'll have to send you a screenshot. Remind me later.
But then like the next day I went in and I brought the drums up a little bit. I redid the guitar solo and then I said,
yeah, the mixing was definitely a lot better in the second one. And
yeah, it's called,
you can tell you refined it to where it needed to be.
Yeah. But like I said, you're the only person that's heard that original draft and that original draft no longer exists.
So good. I mean, and it's funny because like in needing to take a break from the activism and music being like, I'm one of those people that when absolutely nothing else can motivate me to stay alive, music can. And I threw myself into this, I don't even know what it's called. Like, I kind of call it a music magazine covering the local music scene. Mm-hmm. But, like, I do all kinds of stuff. Like, I just interviewed to manage a band, and I'm going to be shadowing a photographer. And like, I'm just all over the place. Like I do content creation and graphic design and like all kinds of, I just basically right now, my whole life is set up around being able to drop everything that I'm doing to be creative, and everything that I do in my free time is creative in some way.
Right. Well, before we move on, that song is called Troubled So They Say, and it's on Bill Selby on all platforms. And, you know, and Paul, instead of doing the outro, I'm just going to send you that song. We'll play it at the end of at this episode in place of the outro.
Ah, okay. All right. Cool.
So, so yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I wasn't even thinking about it. I mean, I was thinking about it, but I'd forgotten about it because we've gotten like pretty heavy into this. So
I've been looking for a window since we got on here.
Now that song, I wrote it from the point of view of somebody who was in it at the time.
And it's so funny. Like I've come across a number of songwriters who, if they don't have prior knowledge of the TTI, have some kind of personal experience that gives them a deeper understanding of it, or they've experienced it in a different way. Yeah. Like, one of our local artists here, who's a therapist now, worked in programs. And he was one of those people who was, can't imagine that he was not deeply traumatized by it, because I've never heard anybody until him and then you put into words what it's like to be a kid living in one of those places, and then what it's like to have to live with that trauma after.
Yeah.
Like you guys didn't even live that, but you have enough empathy to like be able to put into words our feelings and our experiences.
Well, the first line of the song is abducted from the night. Abducted in the night from the safety of my bed. Will I see the dawn, or will they end up dead? And then on a side, I say, did they kill my family? Because your family's not there.
Yeah.
Where's your family? Did they kill my family? And then they're dragging you out. And it's just like blinded and tied. They drag me to my fate and everything. And they're not telling me anything. And then like leading out of the first verse, that little aside, it says, discarded by my family.
Yeah. You know, so
I usually don't use the same last word in a verse like that, but at the beginning of the verse, they're concerned about their family, and then they find out they've been discarded by their family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just like I put myself in the mindset of, and I wouldn't have been able to do this song if it hadn't been for episodes 73 and 74, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, just
it's funny.
So you co-wrote that song.
I've actually co-wrote 3 TTI songs like that. Two of them are still in progress, and I've not actually heard any parts of them in a while. But
I was first.
Yep.
First.
But yeah, it's weird. Like I was telling a girl, the one who was saying she was afraid of getting involved in activism, and I was like, you'll find that once you start telling people,
can't stop,
this happened to me, they are hooked. They want to hear this shit. And it does not take, it's never taken me more than 5 minutes for somebody to be like, holy fuck, what do we do to shut these down? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not hard, and you're not fighting against anything. Like, the things we're fighting against are, like, program owners and politicians and shit. Like the big guns.
Well, the thing
when
is,
when it comes to society, this outrages people mm-hmm. when they find out it exists.
Well, the thing that some, you know, and I'm talking once again as a cult survivor, but one thing that people, like, if they were part of this through no fault of their own, and I'm talking to TTI survivors and cult survivors who are in the closet, so to speak, and haven't decided to come out, you know, go public yet. Yeah, you are going to get some backlash. But you know mm-hmm. what? People that give you backlash, I got 2 words for them. Fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't there. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. And they're not worth your damn time. That's what I would tell any survivor, cult, TTI, child abuse, drug traffic, you know, sexual trafficking, which, well, TTI is trafficking. But, you know, any survivor that has got this, you know, it's just like, finally, I didn't go public with it until just a few years ago. You know, mm-hmm. like when I did episodes 10 and 11 of Crimes, Killers, Cults, and Beer, that was the first time I had told the story. And, you know, so it's just like, but yeah, it's just like the gratification that you get from by going public and getting your story out there, getting it off your chest and putting it into the ears of other people, it's so gratifying. Mm-hmm. But and it's just like, yeah, there are going to be people, there have been people who have come at me, but the people that have come at me are people that still believe the doctrine that cult was preaching. And you know what? They can go fuck themselves.
And you find the vast majority of people look at that shit and think, what in the fuck? The people running these things are insane.
One person sent me an email. I'm not going to listen to your podcast episodes because I don't want to hear you defame a righteous man. And I replied back to him. I said, well, why don't you listen and then tell me everything I got wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard a word from him again.
Yep. Yeah.
When you force truth down people's throats, they can't help but swallow it eventually.
Great analogy. They can't help it. That was great.
I use that analogy for a lot of stuff. I actually, when I'm asking a friend if I've introduced them to music, I ask them if I've force fed them this certain band yet.
Citizen Soldier.
Yep.
I had to think there for a second because I was still laughing about what you said before. Then you said that. I was like, crap, now I got to think about something else.
By the way, Citizen Soldier is fucking awesome. Those guys are starting a tour in April. He's actually the former staff that used to work in programs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the one that gave me the first outsider validation that was like hit me like a train in terms of like, whoa, somebody who didn't experience this actually understands it. I did a whole interview with him where I got into it. And I, the second I broached the topic of the TTI, he went on an 8-minute long rant. That was the longest answer to a question he gave me, and outlined every single problem and what makes the TTI dangerous. Damn. It's an incredible rundown of like, it's a great summary of how the TTI damages people. And he touches on the fact that it's lifelong, and it's not just impacting the kid and involving the kid, but it needs to involve the whole family and the household. Like, he acknowledges so many little tiny nuances in just those 8 minutes that it was just, I was blown away by the fact that somebody understood all of that, having never experienced it.
Yeah. So now, one thing that you said that there's one politician that supports this. I'm assuming that politician is probably a Democrat.
I don't think he is.
Oh, really? Because, Mitt Romney's a Republican, you know, and a lot of the other people that, like, took, you know, the other politicians that took money from TTI, they're mostly Republicans. That's why I was asking.
He's a Republican.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And I think he has had to be so careful in the directions that he chooses to take. And
especially being a Republican.
Takes on. Exactly. Being a Republican in a Republican state, trying to speak out against Republicans, you gotta tread carefully.
Yeah. I didn't see that coming. I mean, I figured, and that threw me. Okay, who is it, and what has he been doing to what's he been doing as far as trying to push this because unlike cults, a cult is like a local government, a local law enforcement issue. TTI is federal, at least it should be.
Yeah.
So what has he been, who is it, and what has he been doing?
So is Mike.
And by the way, don't pepper. You know, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the listeners. Don't pepper his office with letters, because he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, please don't. He won't return my calls. So, he's just really busy. And like I said, Utah has been hit with a lot of TTI related incidents and like press coverage in the last couple of years.
And I imagine it's getting turned up to 11 right about now.
Yeah.
Think about everything that we've had go on in the last 2 years here, TTI related. Every single time one of those things happens, every death, every time somebody speaks out, every time a program gets put on conditional status, every time a program gets shut down because two fucking insane ass journalists decide they're going to uncover shit, and expose it. he gets it. Like, and it's, we haven't gone more than 2 or 3 months without one of those in the last 2 years.
Good.
So yeah. He's, I can tell you that this is something that is very actively on his mind and has been for quite a while. His first involved. So his main focus, in terms of like agenda, before he got involved in TTI stuff, was, adoption, foster care, like children's rights kind of things. Which when I found that out, I was like, oh yeah, this guy, this, you know, he's a good guy. Like, he's the kind of person we want on our side. I was adopted. So, anybody who's going to speak up for people who are put in a position of having to be silent about that kind of trauma, in a position of power, like, has my respect. And he just done the same thing for the TTI, in 2021. Yeah. He worked with Paris Hilton on State Bill 127, which was a complete overhaul of our entire legislative documentation regarding congregate care programs in Utah and how they can operate. They went after every single little detail. Like, there are clauses in that bill that say that programs cannot use repetitive motion as as punishment, specifically including but not limited to push-ups, sit-ups, running laps, etc.
Or repetitive for like hours, like in the program. You said you hadn't watched it. These two girls, hands together, hands apart, or palms together, palms apart, palms up, palms down. They had to do that for like 8 hours straight. Cool. And they did it like for a minute, like in the documentary. And it's just a minute. It had me ready to freaking shoot myself.
Yeah.
After a minute, had to do it for 8 hours straight.
Exactly. The big thing my program used was calisthenics, so squats and lunges, or running laps. But we would do it for hours on end. Like, we are actually in the group that I've been involved in with people from my program. One thing that's been consistently coming up is so it was supposed to be a school, but we never went to school. We spent our school hours doing repetitive punishment for the most part. They'd find something to punish us for, and then they'd be like, okay, well, we're gonna have to do this before we can go to school. And then by the time we were finished, it was time to go to the next thing. So it was kind of like a way to, like, for them to, as an excuse for them to not teach us educationally and academically. It was the repetitive punishment. But yeah, State Bill 127 targeted specific tactics of programs like that, like in very detailed ways. It took about a year or so for it to kind of catch on. But like the reason that the state was able to penalize and go after Diamond Ranch Academy was because that bill outlined the process that allowed them to. It made what they were doing officially illegal. And two, it also required them to keep strict and detailed documentation of every single incident. So when they went in and they looked at those incident reports, one of two things would happen. One, that documentation would not exist and the program would get hit with a bunch of shit for that. Or that documentation exists exactly how it's supposed to and gives them all the evidence they need to hit them with other things. So the state has been able to go after Diamond Ranch, been able to go after Daniels Academy, and both of them have been shut down because the new laws
gave
the authority to do that.
Where's Diamond Ranch?
Hurricane, Southern Utah. You have to go through there on the way to LA or Vegas.
Okay, so in the desert. I was.
Oh yeah. No, it's the only thing that's there. It's a tiny little town, and having been there, I mean, there's it's all small local businesses, and Diamond Ranch Academy.
It just rang a bell. There's like some sort of.
I mean, I'm not surprised that somebody tried to get Diamond or a program in Diamond Ranch's place up and running again so quickly, because that program was fueling the entire city, the entire county's economy. Between St. George and Hurricane, those places live on program money.
Wow.
And I said when I went down to Hurricane, seeing how small it was, I was like, no fucking wonder they hate us so much for shutting it down.
Yeah.
This would have tanked their entire economy. Like, people lost jobs. Everybody lost money. Every single one of those tiny local businesses lost the majority of their business and the majority of their income because that money wasn't coming in anymore and it was not getting spent within the city.
Well, it's like when slavery was abolished. You know, I mean, it's like, Paul, take a wild guess as to how much 1 year per kid costs at one of. Well, hold on. No, not a year, because these things are marketed initially as like 5 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
So just take a stab at it. How much do you think, like, just let's just say it's 6 weeks. Just take a stab.
For the cost of one child.
Yeah, to go through the program, concluding they go from start to finish and they get out when they're supposed to.
6 weeks, I'd say probably anywhere between 20 to 30,000.
You're pretty close.
Wait, for the whole time?
For the like the 6 weeks?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Diamond Ranch had like 120 students.
Wow.
And they were charging about 12 grand a month per student. Mm-hmm. That's over $1 million a month.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about you would think for that kind of money, you'd think they'd be staying at like the Hilton or something like that.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But
the population of Hurricane in 2020 was just over 20,000.
Yeah, and basically you've got
bringing in about $1.5 million. I mean, overall, I mean, but these programs don't take that money and use it for the program.
No, it goes to the mansion. It goes to the mansion that belongs to the owner.
Feeds the local economy.
Right. That's where
they have to do business with all the locals to stay on the good side.
But what the kids live in, they live in squalor. They live in a building that should have been condemned 20 years ago.
So they bringing in $1.5 million a month. In a town of 20,000 people, suddenly getting that entire source of income shut off?
Yeah.
Like, no wonder we had cops follow us out of the county when we left Hurricane. They followed us around town the whole time. They shadowed us the whole time. They kept a close eye on us, and they were not afraid to make sure we knew it. Uh-huh. And the only thing we were there, we didn't cause a scene. We didn't cause problems. People knew who we were before we even got there.
It's like, how dare you be upset
just the concept and the idea that, oh, hey, I heard that there might be some survivors from these kind of programs showing up, had 2/3 of their entire police force there.
Unreal.
Wow. I am going to tap out. You have full control, brother.
All right. Glad. You know, hope you can be on more of these.
Definitely, definitely. And I want to continue this conversation with Nora. Maybe on the flip side too, because I'm starting a program for podcasters. I'll bring you up to speed a little bit on this, Bill, too.
Cool.
And it was something I was working on a few weeks ago.
I'll get her your Facebook information and whatnot. You guys can connect.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Nora, glad to meet you.
See ya.
Bill, you have a good one. Everybody, I'll be back on the flip side.
All right. We'll see you next episode.
All right.
So, yeah. Like I said, I mean, he has to be up for work at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So
at least he didn't have to tap out mid episode because it was doing dead.
yeah. It's like now we're, you know, we're probably going to wrap it up in like the next 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But no, it was on, and I was watching him too. I mean, you could tell that he was just like, if he didn't have those sunglasses on, his face, his eyes would have been as big as his lenses were, because I mean, you could tell. It's this, but you know what?
Expected response for me. Like, I've talked to enough people about it that it's just like.
But there's two more eyes. Two more eyes that are open, and he, he has a lot more listeners than Crimes, Crows, Skulls, and Beer does for his podcast. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, all it takes to get people to want to be part of making this change is telling them that this exists. As soon as they know this is a thing, most people are like, where do you want me? What can I do? Like, and then they go on to like talk to other people and I'm impressed and I'm proud of our survivor community and the work that everybody's done in the last few years.
Yeah.
Because this is a fight that survivors have been doing since the 70s. Right. And it hasn't gained any traction until the last couple of years. And now all of a sudden it's like people finally want to listen to us. Like, and what's interesting is that if you look at a good, like the vast majority of the people who are like officially like leading this movement in any kind of like public capacity, they're all in their 30s. They're all from my age group. They all went to programs 15 to 25 years ago. And we're kind of the generation that's taken the lead on let's fucking do something about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been around, like, you know, those kids that were at that church service I was showing you about with Teen Challenge. Those kids are like my age, you know, at the time.
And I know women who were in programs before you were born.
Yeah. Well,
who've been actively trying to fight this since
like
then.
Like Wendy, I don't know if she's a little bit older than me or a little bit younger than me. I don't know, but she was, you know, she was part of it. And, so it has been going on and everything, but it's just like, you know, your generation, you know, the people that were in it in the 90s and the early 2000s, are the ones that are basically, you know, just like, you know, picking up the flag and,
yeah,
you know, storming the gates.
Yeah, we've been the ones who are like, okay, let's fucking do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say that like every like generation, like every 10 years or so of people who've been in these places, like everybody has a really valuable role to play in this. Because the people who were there before you were born shows the longevity of these places and the fact that they've been able to maintain for that long.
Well, when I was
coming out of programs now who are saying they treated us the same way they treated you back in the 70s.
Right.
And that's incredibly validating for everybody, but it also shows that, hey, nothing's changed.
Yeah. When I first spoke out in public about it, it wasn't on CKCB. It was on the Human Monsters podcast. And, you know, he had me on and I brought on two people, you know, that were in the cult as well. Mm-hmm. And, I think I was, I don't know, 47 or 48 when I went on that show. I'm 50 now, but I brought a guy who was like 10 years younger than me and a girl that was 10 years younger than him. So there's three generations right there that were all affected by the same cult. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why we had those people specific. I did that on purpose just to show.
Yeah. I have a podcast episode that I've recorded, with two people from my wilderness program, one who went 10 years after me and one who went, like a year or two ago, right before, like they closed this past summer. But this person went like a year or two ago. So like I had like me from before the rebrand. And then another girl who'd been there 10 years after me, and then somebody who was 10 years after them. And it's always like disgustingly validating, I guess this is the best way to put it.
Right.
When you hear people who've experienced almost the identical things to you 20, 30, 40 years after you did.
Yeah. Would I go hang out with a 30-year-old? Probably not. Would I go hang out with a 30-year-old who grew up in Faith Assembly? Yeah, I would.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. I hang out. I mean, we have a local TTI group that meets occasionally. I don't know what to call us. I'm going to come up with a name for us. There's three of us. There's three women who are all my age, late 30s. And then all the rest of us are kids in their, like, guys in their 20s, 18 to 24.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's, but you all have that common ground, though. You all have the common ground.
Exactly. And it's funny because I actually found most of the, I mean, a couple of the kids in the group, like the kid I'm mentoring and then, the one who's kind of like helping me with him. Those two found me through my Discord, but most of the local survivors I've found have come because I drop a trauma bomb of, hey, I went to programs while I'm out at the bar at karaoke. And then people are like, wait a minute. Wait, what? Me too. Wow. And then, like, I love those moments because you get to see, like, the realization on their face that, holy fuck, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And I've spent years thinking I was the only one. The best experience that I had with that was on my drive back from LA for Survivor Prom. I had the kid I'm mentoring with me, and I needed to go into a vape shop, but he's 18, so he couldn't come in. So I left him in the car. I go inside. I'm wearing a citizen soldier shirt. Thank you, Jake. and I walk in, and the kid doesn't get through the sentence. He's like, oh, hey, how are you? How can I? Holy fuck, citizen soldier. I fucking love those guys. And we get to talking, and then I start telling him, you know, my connection to Jake and about the interview I did with him, that where he talks about all of this, and the kid just goes, oh, wait, like residential programs? I went to one of those places. And I was like, which one? What years? And he tells me. And then my only response was Outback Therapeutic Expeditions, Mission Mountain School, 2003 to 2005. That kid just lost like 3 inches in height and just started bawling. Because he'd been so alone for so long. Like, he was so thoroughly convinced that he was the only one of us on Earth. And then not only do I walk into his store and be like, trauma bonding, bitch. But then I'm like, I just came from this huge event in LA where there's 300 of us together in one place.
Yeah.
And like, pull him into that community of like, understanding, like finally feeling like you belong and people get you without you having to justify the trauma.
Yeah. And that's it. And I haven't found like a whole treasure trove of cult survivors to compare notes with, but you know, I found you, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, and they're close. They're pretty similar. They're cousins. Yeah. Colt and TTI, they're cousins. So,
well, and I think the like mainstream understanding of how cults operate and stuff, I mean, it's still very limited, but most people have some understanding that one, cults brainwash people and they're bad. So when you can draw parallels between something like the TTI,
you have a cult leader
and well known,
you have a cult leader, exactly. And you have the TTI president. Mm-hmm. The same thing.
Exactly.
The only difference that makes TTI worse is it's backed by the government.
Yeah.
So,
and it's justified as, well, nothing else helps these kids. So,
right.
You know, we have to give it a try to save them. Like, it's for our own good.
Yep. So, well, this has been, you know, there was no script here for either one of us. This is completely unscripted. This is completely off the cuff and everything. I'm just like, you know what? I'm like, let's just do it. Let's just do it and see what happens.
I love the impromptu stuff. I actually have an interview to do tomorrow with a band. I'm helping with a local music festival. And so they have me like doing the kind of like press coverage, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm interviewing all the bands. I'm going to do like fan and crowd like reactions and things like that during the shows. And it's going to be a lot of fun, but I've got some interviews to do tomorrow and I am not prepared. I have no questions. But they always end up better like that because you get into topics and things that I think conversation gets deeper when it's unscripted.
Right. It does. I agree.
It's more raw.
But there's a difference between doing an interview and covering a serial killer.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, thanks for coming on and, you know, doing the first officially as far as like carrying the name CKCB Presents episodes, even though it's the second one. It's just, this is the first one that started the episode with the name. So
well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be able to spread awareness about this on platforms that want to support it.
But thanks for that. Definitely. Thanks for coming on and definitely, you know, keep listening because we're going to have the song at the end of that, at the end of, you know, when we say goodbye, which we are going to do right now. Anyway, until next time, later.
See you, fuckers.
Healing with the pain.